Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Ben Thompson, 14 years of career experience, a battalion chief with Birmingham Fire Rescue. Ben was a jack of all trades who traveled across the country while exploring what exactly he wanted to do with his life. When the recession in 2008 hit the country hard, Ben decided to enter into the world of EMS, where he found a huge passion and yearned for, but has no problems letting others know it was very hard work. While working for a private EMS service, a friend told him about Birmingham Fire hiring individuals. With age and responsibility on his shoulders, Ben decided to give it a shot. Looking at where he is today, it's safe to say he made the best decision. I want the listeners to tune into Ben's discussion and thoughts about promotions and how firefighters need to view the good and bad when it comes to the fire service. With that, I present Mr. Ben Thompson.
All right, I'm Ben Thompson. I'm a battalion chief for the Birmingham Fire and Rescue Service. I've been in the department for 14 years. Started back in 2011. I was a paramedic working for a private ambulance company. Didn't do that job very long before I realized that was a lot of work working for a private ambulance company. So the opportunity to join the fire service opened up, and it was just in time because I was newly married. And we had just had our first child, my son. So the career came just at the right time for me in my life. So I was 28 years old. Prior to that, I had held just about every kind of job you could think. I'd waited tables, I'd built fences, shuttled garbage, worked at a ski resort. I was a commercial fisherman in Alaska. My friends like to joke around, I was a hobo in Hawaii. That's actually where I met my wife. I was hitchhiking around the island for a few months, just trying to, you know, find my place in the world. And I found my wife. So, and luckily she had low standards for guys, I guess. So she went with me and got my butt in gear and led me to this great career.
Okay. All right. So with your whole outlook and all the different type of jobs and occupations that you had, how did you stumble upon the EMS side first?
Well, so in 2008, I don't know how old you are, Danny. You look like a young guy.
I'm going to be 40 in February.
Okay, so you remember the Great Recession?
Yes.
Of 2008. So when I was kind of just bumming around the world, I could always get a job. You know, that was never a problem. I could go get a job, Pizza Hut, whatever. But in 2008, I was in California, and I could not get a job anywhere. I mean, it was, you know, you walk in and, hey, what can you do? What's your trade? What's your craft? I had nothing. I mean, I was a jack of all trades. I could, you know, give you my back and give you my time, but I had no true skills. So went into EMT school because it was to be completely honest, it was the shortest program the community college offered.
Okay.
It was one semester. It was cheap. Cost $500. I went to school, I think my final grade in the class was like a 99 because I just ate it up. I loved the EMS side. And the instructor said, you should go to paramedic school. And to be completely honest, I was still, you know, kind of one foot out the door kind of guy. And I said, well, I don't have 2 years to give to school. I want to go somewhere. He said, it's 1 year. I said, oh, 1 year. Mm-hmm. So I continued on and I got my paramedic license. Loved EMS. And to be completely honest, one of the guys in the class said, hey, they're giving the firefighter test, you know, next week. You should sign up. And the way things work in the fire service, you know, it's really slow. So went, took the test with a few thousand people, kind of felt like I was standing in line for a lottery ticket. So took the test and really didn't think about it again for about a year. Then all of a sudden I get a letter. Hey, come on in for an interview. And like I said, I was working for a private ambulance, and anybody who's worked for a private ambulance knows that is a lot of work.
Right.
And so I said, I've got to do something so that I can do for a long time because I've got a baby on the way. Well, I had a baby in the world at that time.
Okay.
So that's kind of what led me there.
Okay. So, I mean, like you just stated, that everyone knows the EMS side
especially nowadays, super busy, overloaded, understaffed. Usually most places are, you know, understaffed, underpaid, a lot of call volumes. So upon getting that letter and going through the process and getting hired with Birmingham, was the Fireside everything you thought it would be?
To be completely honest, I knew nothing about the Fireside.
Okay.
All I knew was in paramedic school, you know, there's a lot of departments around here, around Birmingham. And I'll be honest, Birmingham had a reputation of taking paramedics, chewing them up and spitting them out. You know, everybody kind of warned you away from there. Hey, don't go there if you're a paramedic. And that drew me there because I like adventure. I like challenging myself. I want to go where no one else wants to go. That's just what I want to do. I want to do it and be able to stand up at the end and say, I did it. That's kind of what drew me to be a commercial fisherman in Alaska. I like doing hard things. So, So when I went to Birmingham and went through recruit school, you know, I was 28 years old. I had done a lot of jobs, a lot of hard things. And when I went there and they said, here's a bunch of rules, follow these rules and you'll be fine. It's going to be hard. I kind of liken it to Forrest Gump when he goes to boot camp, how he just kind of, you know, just fit in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just fit in. I mean, it was like being on the basketball team again in high school. You know, it was all about hustle and heart. And, you know, unfortunately for basketball, I was 5'7". So I never, you know, I couldn't make myself tall, but I had plenty of heart, plenty of determination. And in the fire service, that can carry you a long way.
Right.
And I think that's what's carried me where I have. And, you know, recruit school, I fell in love with every bit of it. And I'm still in love with it.
Okay. And I want to fast forward just a little bit. So upon completing recruit school, your first assignment, where was it? And what was it like walking through the doors of the firehouse?
So I had a brief first assignment at Station 15, which is on the west side of Birmingham, which is when I was in paramedic school. Birmingham's west side also had a reputation. So I remember saying to someone, I want to work in Birmingham and I want to work on the west side. Well, that's where I went. And on my first day, my first call was a cardiac arrest. So, you know, do that. Second call, cardiac arrest. And then a little bit later that day, had a house fire.
Okay.
You know, this is day one. And it was just like, you know, I was going home that day, just like, man, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. This is going to be great. And then, you know, then I got transferred. I got moved pretty much to the next door station, which is Station 20, which has a whole reputation about being a tough, tough place. And I still consider it one of my first homes. You know, I stayed there for 3 years. Every day was 16, 17 runs with a fire sprinkled in. So, you know, it was really hard and really tough. But, man, I'm so proud of those years. But I think I kind of got a little sidetracked. What you're talking about is, was it everything I wanted it to be? At the beginning, it was.
Okay.
And then about 2 years in, you know, I was 28 and kind of an idealist. You know, I have ideas about the world and what I want to be and what I want to do. And, you know, the fire service, when you start, they tell you it's all about doing the right thing. And it is. It is all about doing the right thing. But what happens is the guys sit around the table and they watch their leadership who they're doing jobs that aren't the same as us. They're dealing with politics and politicians and they're making compromises. And I think we don't know how to handle that because we're out here being led and guided by the right thing, the mission all the time. Unfortunately, when you get upstairs and you're having to run a fire department, you have to make compromises. And in the eyes of the guys in the field, a lot of times it can look like the wrong thing. So it's kind of like your bubble gets burst a little bit when you pay attention to that stuff. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about it a little later if you want me to, but when I did the community paramedicine program for our department, I went upstairs for 3 years, you know, out of the field and served in an administrative role. And man, what a gift that was. Didn't feel like it at the time, but
mm-hmm.
you know, now that I've got some space in between now and then, it's given me a lot of perspective. But yeah, so that's early on, and I see guys do this all the time. They come in, they're rip roaring, ready to go, you know, loving the fire service. They get a couple of years in, they watch their administration make some decisions, and they're sitting there going, oh, this isn't what I thought. And this place sucks. And, you know, the department's terrible and all this. And you have to look at them and say, well, how does that affect what you're doing when the bell rings and you go out and serve a citizen? It's really not. It's really only affecting you when you're sitting here at the table in your little circle, just bringing each other down, you know? So, but you know, I can talk all day, and I don't want to talk negative about any side of the fire service, because my perspective on all of it is it's a big, beautiful mess, and I love it.
Okay. Now I love it. I definitely want to hear more about that, you know, as the interview goes on. But a question I have for you is, so it seemed like your first two stations were stations that were very busy, and it's my experience that the busy stations have the individuals that are dialed in, that are into the job. So how important is that for a new person coming in to surround yourself with and try to emulate those individuals?
Oh, it was extremely important. Those guys, they were like heroes to me, you know, coming in. All I wanted to do was have them pat me on the back and not even tell me good job, just not to tell me bad job. You know, that was my thing. You know, I was really lucky, because not only were they all competent, good firefighters, we were all around the same age. So we were all kind of in the same stage in life. So we had kids at home about the same age. Our outlooks were, you know, similar. You know, like, you know, 28 years old, you know, now that I'm 41, 42, sounds kind of young, but at the time I felt old to be coming onto the fire service. But you know, those guys, you know, that they had been there for 8-9 years, but we were the same age. So, luckily they accepted me and brought me in. You know, and they just kind of have one of those attitudes that, yeah, it's busy. Yeah, it's dirty. Yeah, we're not going to sleep. But hell, isn't it a lot of fun? You know, that was kind of the big thing.
Okay, all right. And as you acquired years under your belt, and you know, you gained experience and knowledge from those individuals, at what point in your career, what decided to make you think about going up for the next promotional step?
So my promotional journey was extremely accelerated.
Okay.
I came on and I was on the ambulance at a busy station, and I had babies at home. I wasn't sleeping, and I'm not going to lie, it was a struggle personally, for myself. I had a really good battalion chief that was very inspirational to me. And he just told me, he said, look, he said, if you're not happy where you are, you gotta study and either promote out of it, or you gotta go somewhere else, or you just have to accept it. Well, I didn't really want to go anywhere else, because like I said, I didn't want to admit defeat. So in between all those calls, I took every book I could find, everything I could find around the fire station, and read it. You know, even if I saw an unlabeled binder that was just on a shelf, I would take it down, open it up, and I was finding all kinds of stuff that the guys had left through the years. That fire station was built in the 60s and had housed some of the most legendary firefighters in my department. And they all left stuff behind, you know, little nuggets of knowledge, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a reader anyway. So, you know, I don't like TV. I never really have. So if the guys were in there watching TV, I'd be at the table just kind of reading a book, you know, listening to the conversation and giving my 2 cents. But I took the promotional test it was apparatus operator. So that's engineer in other places. I took that with 1 year on. I had 1 year in the department. Scored really well, and then had to sit on it for 2 years. So I was promoted with 3 years on, but it was really from a test that I took with 1 year on.
Right.
And I'll be honest, not everyone was very happy about it. I'm not going to say I was like cocky, or to be honest, I didn't feel like I was ready either, but I was 28 years old, had kids at home. I was just kind of like, you know what? I'm going for it because you just got it. You're going to get what you put in. And I put in a lot of work, and that's why I got promoted. I had to just tell myself that they didn't give me this. I worked for it. Now, did I have the experience I needed? No, I didn't, but I didn't create the process.
Right.
So, hey, I went for it. And I'll be honest, it's something that's kind of funny. Every time someone would get promoted, they would hang out the promotional list in the station, right? Like if everybody got promoted around the city. The time I got promoted, no one hung it up in the station. And I'll never forget that. I remember I came in, I looked up on the bulletin board and it wasn't up. So those guys were my friends, still my friends, but that was a moment where it was like, okay. So I kind of took that as a challenge that maybe they don't feel I'm ready, but I'm going to make myself ready. So, I think I can confidently say that I've worked hard to try to meet my own expectations and the expectations of those guys, early on. So I don't know. And I feel like maybe I have.
And what's your opinion on that? Because that is a, I don't want to say a hot topic, but it is a good conversation starter if you ask firemen who've been in certain positions for a for an extended period of time, how do you feel about an individual coming into the service and no fault of their own, as soon as they can promote, they promote and they score well and they get promoted. So what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, it's not the person's fault that gets promoted, but I do believe there's different ways you can go about getting yourself promoted. I've seen a lot of guys who come in and they learn what dots to connect, what classes to take, what things to say, and they move their way up. I connected those dots. I'm not going to deny I went to class, I did what I was supposed to do, but I also went. I'll never forget this. I went to a conference and John Salka, a chief from FDNY, was speaking, and I had 2 years in the service, and it was a huge auditorium. It was supposed to be a chief's conference, and our department sent an email out and said, "We're going to send chief officers first, but any firefighters who'd like to go, send an email. First come, first serve. If we have spaces, you can go." Well, I was one of them because I, jumped right on it. Well, Salka, in the middle of his speech, he says, "Who in here has less than 5 years on?" Everybody stand, the 5 year guy stand up, 3 years, 2 years. Then it was just me, in this auditorium of 400 people. I was the most junior person. And he kind of like, told me, good job on being here. But I can't remember exactly what he said, but he kind of gave me this advice, like, don't focus on the paper, focus on the experience, focus on the knowledge, focus on what you can gain from the job, right? And it kind of changed me. I didn't take another class for maybe 2 more years after that. After I'd gone from class, 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 I really started to focus on the job, the day-to-day, and see what I could learn. I think that was really good advice. So I think, as long as you have balance, you can be a good promotee quickly if
Right.
you don't exclude the experience piece, And the other thing too is don't get too cocky. Remember that you're not the only brain on the fire ground, on the scene. Your bars don't make you the only brain, the only person to speak. You're in a group for a reason. So that I think that's where a lot of people they connect those dots, get promoted, then they think, well, it's all up to me now.
Right.
Some of it is, but not all of it.
Right. Okay. And how long did you stay in the apparatus operator position before you promoted up?
So it was 1 more year. So
Okay.
what happened was got promoted. As soon as I got promoted, the lieutenant's test opened up and I was not going to take it, because I really was proud of where I'd made it. That battalion chief told me, he said, "Ben," he said, "you cannot pass the test up." He said, "There's going to be a leadership vacuum." He saw what was coming. He saw that a lot of people were going to leave. He believed, in me. So I took the test. And I got promoted. But a funny thing happened along the way. I got in trouble. So I got assigned to a really busy engine company on the east side of town. And pretty experienced crew. I really wanted them to, respect me and all that good stuff. I walk in the door. You know, my job is to drive, right? Well, I walk in, and the day I walk in, the lieutenant looks at me and he says, "Hey, I'm going on special assignment. I'm going to teach the recruit school for the next 4 months. So you're in charge." So I'm on a different side of town. So all my mentors are kind of gone. I'm in charge of the busiest engine company in the city on the A shift. And, anyway, we do our calls. And one day we were asked to come to administration to pick up a letter of commendation for one of the guys. And, we were pretty far out of territory, and a fire call went out in our territory. Me and the driver kind of had a little talk. "Hey, I think we can make it. I think we can beat the guys there," which had we not had an accident on the way, we probably would have. So we had a new administration in place. The fire chief that I'd been hired under was actually had passed away. A new fire chief had taken over. A new executive staff was in place, and they wanted to set an example of what accountability was. So me and the driver got to serve as that example.
Gotcha.
So I found myself suspended for 24 hours for insubordination on my birthday. And when the promotional test came up, I'd scored pretty well. And the way it works is you do this county test and then you have to do this city test. Well, I'd scored really well on the county test. I had the city test to go. And a lot of people were telling me, "Hey, man, don't even go to the city test. You've been suspended. Like, you're not going to get it. Don't even waste your time." But, you know, me, I'm not going to pass up an opportunity to at least see the test. So I go. And at the time, my department was trying to inspire people to go to paramedic school because no one wanted to go. I'll never forget it. The assistant chief walks in during the test and he puts his arm around me and he announces to the whole place, this is before we've taken the test, he says, "It's a great day to be a paramedic. Hey, is anybody here a paramedic? Hey, Ben, I think you're a paramedic." And basically just kind of letting everybody know, like, they're going to promote paramedics no matter what, because we want you guys to go to paramedic school.
Let's see.
So I get promoted based on being my paramedic license, basically.
Right.
Again, left a sour taste in a lot of people.
I was going to ask, but yeah.
But, you know, at the time we were really hurting for paramedics, and the fire chief, that was one of the things he was trying to do. You know, included with the accountability piece was, "Hey guys, we need y'all to go to paramedic school. So the guys who have it, we're going to reward you," to try to inspire others. And it worked. You know, some more guys came, and I wasn't the only surprise promotion on the list, but I was a group of paramedics that we kind of got pushed through for that. So, that's kind of a long story for just another promotion, but
no, I mean, it's relevant. It's relevant.
Yeah. But, then, did a year as a lieutenant in the field. And then after that, that's when that, you know, like, again, same fire chief, very forward thinking, started putting feelers out, said he wanted a community paramedicine program. And, me just, you know, I was interested in it. I'd learned a little bit about it. So submitted a memo saying I would like to be a part of whatever committee you put together to make a community paramedicine program. It wasn't a committee. It was me. I got pulled out of the field and put on days. So, and that's where I spent 3 years building the program. And sorry if I feel like I've been talking a little long here.
No,
about the,
no, you're fine.
I didn't want to interrupt you. But yeah, 3 years as lieutenant in the administrative office doing the community paramedicine program. After 3 years of that, I was ready to get back in the field. So kind of hit the ejection button, got back to the field. And I think I did about a year and a half, and then I was promoted to captain. Got made captain, did 2 years as a engine captain in probably one of the coolest stations in the city of Birmingham, Station 24. And again, the battalion chief's test comes up, and I completely had no interest in doing it. I said, "I've got the best job in the city. I am going to retire as an engine captain. This is the greatest job ever." Took the test and came out number one, and boom, then I'm a battalion chief 2 years later. And that was 2 years ago, actually, this week.
Okay.
So I've been in my position for 2 years as a battalion chief.
Okay.
So yeah, I made battalion chief with 11 years on, which was way faster than I could have ever imagined.
Right. And so with that, with you really not having any, I don't want to say aspirations, but the battalion chief scene was never on your radar, but you ended up becoming a battalion chief. So the question for you is, what kind of leader did you want to be for? Because I'm assuming with you being a battalion chief, you have several stations that are kind of under your watch or command, if I would say.
Yeah, I have seven fire stations
Seven.
under me.
So what kind of leadership did you want to portray to those stations for them to see?
To be honest, I had two really good battalion chiefs when I was in the field. Obviously, my first battalion chief and my last battalion chief. They were both really fair, and really trusting. They were really good at falling in to whatever they were really good at identifying your strengths and then kind of falling in behind them and kind of pushing you that way. I'd say my first battalion chief, he noticed I was a big reader and I asked a lot of questions, so he kind of fed into it. After a fire, he would usually make a point to take me around the scene, just him and me, or him and me and a couple of other interested people, and really just give us a class. Hey, this is where the fire started. This is that kind of construction. This is why I did what I did. And it was really, really good. I mean, he was really good at making me identify that opportunities, I guess, because, I was on the rescue. I was on the ambulance in the beginning. So I wasn't a nozzle firefighter. I went into a lot of fires. I did a lot of firefighting, but I wasn't the guy on the back of the engine jumping off. But he kind of made me understand that that's not what it's all about. Like, even if your assignment is to stand in the yard, you can watch the fire, you can watch the smoke, you can watch conditions change. There's so much that you can learn from every opportunity. And he really pointed that out to me and fed that, because he knew I was hungry for knowledge. So he just kind of led me to the knowledge, I guess. And then my last battalion chief, was very even keeled. Very fair. I was a captain who wanted to train a lot. I wanted, because for myself and for my crew, he never held me back from that. He really pushed me, hey, go for it, go for it. And when I wanted to step up and get the rest of the battalion included, he just asked me, what do you need? He didn't try to take it over. He supported it. And he did that with anybody who wanted to step up. He just fell in line and really, watered the seed, I guess we can say, if I can take a term from Buddhism. Watered that seed that he saw that was really good. And so that's what I want to do. I wanted to identify the good things and bring that and just kind of grow that, versus pointing out a bunch of negative things and try to suppress it, if that makes sense.
So with that being said, with you being a battalion chief now, the aggressiveness, it's a buzzword, but you like to use the word intentional instead. So I want to hear your thoughts on that.
So my first crew was very aggressive when I was a rookie. They were very, very aggressive, but they had the knowledge to be aggressive. They weren't just breaking stuff down. They weren't ripping ceiling down, just throwing a pike pole through ceiling and ripping it down. They were methodical, where they placed the pike pole before they ripped the ceiling down. You know what I mean? Like, they understood, hey, if I grab it right here and pull, the whole thing's going to come down a lot easier, versus just going in the middle of the room and going to town. They had the knowledge to go with the aggression. In the last 5 years, my department has hired 400 people. In the last 5 years, everyone on the back is junior. No one has the experience that those guys had, that I had, that I was working with as a rookie. I think we're in a stage right now where aggression is good when it's a fallback. But aggression should not be our default. We need to educate ourselves to then be intentional with our actions. And then when you're intentional and you put a little aggression behind your intention, you're a lot more effective, if that makes sense. So I think of, like, a baseball. Like, if you took a real aggressive kid put him at home plate and threw pitches, and he just swung the bat as hard as he could, just as aggressively as he could. He's not going to hit the ball. He might get lucky every now and again and put one out of the park, but he's going to strike out a lot. And if you teach that kid how to swing the bat, and then he puts that aggression behind it, he's going to be a good hitter, right? So I feel like we're, and I know it's not just Birmingham, it's all around. Everyone's had staffing issues. So if the nation's fire service has repaired its staffing issues, we got a bunch of junior guys in the across the country. And if they come in and think that, hey, I'm a firefighter, I need to be aggressive with skipping that education piece and learning exactly how to do it, you're going to get a lot of people hurt, or you're just going to waste a lot of time, breaking a lot of stuff you shouldn't have broken.
Right.
So I kind of feel like we're just in a different phase of the fire service. We really need to focus on be students of the game. If I can just name drop your podcast there. And then maybe in, 5 or 6 years, we'll start pushing the aggression like they used to, if that makes sense.
Right. So, I mean, the you mentioned earlier 400 or 500?
400.
400 employees that have come into the fire service. It's one of those things that the fire service is not a very desirable trait anymore. A lot of people, they might get into it, and then when they really find out, digging in the weeds of what we do, it's not really for them. But eventually, hopefully, you have mentors that are hopefully educating these new folks that are coming in to be those senior guys that you had when you came on.
Yeah, I do. And I've been lucky. I've had some really good people. but they're junior. Our senior guys are junior. A senior guy could have 3 years on. So that's taking, I try to give a hands-off approach a lot of times, but with some of these guys, I try to take more of a hands-on approach. Hey, you're a senior guy, but I try to challenge them a little more and really make them understand the responsibilities that they have. That, hey, not only are you a senior guy, but you still got a lot to learn too. So teach him what you know, but it should be what I try to foster is more of a journey of togetherness. Like, yeah, you're the senior guy, but you're still a junior guy. So together, you still need to continue to learn. The stuff that he's learning is stuff that you should still be practicing.
Right.
So without chopping down their ego too much, I try to, keep it back a little bit. Like, hey, don't let your ego get too far ahead of you. Ahead of your ability and knowledge.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And honestly, I include myself in that. I'm a battalion chief with 11 years on.
Right.
I need to constantly be studying. So.
Right. Yeah, we all do. I mean, and that's one of the things, like, your years of service don't really mean anything unless you have the education to back it up. And once you get that education, you know as well as I do, the fire service is always evolving. Continuing education is always changing. So we have to kind of keep yourself in tune with the newest knowledge and tactics and techniques out there.
Yep, absolutely. And the biggest hindrance to that is egos. I mean, that's what it is.
Absolutely.
Egos and ego leads to complacency. So that's what you have to battle constantly.
Constantly. Yes.
Constantly, constantly.
Yes. This is a different type of question. I usually like to ask, like, chief officers. So, as let's see here. All right. In your opinion only, why do certain organizations allow individuals who have been subpar their entire career to promote to company officer positions?
I don't think it's really the department allows it. I think that the process, we try to make the promotional process as objective as possible so it can be fair. Because if you get subjective with the promotional processes, you're going to be in court, you're going to have people sour, you're going to be arguing points that you can't really prove. So I think the assessment centers and the checkbox command style that people developed as a result of the assessment centers, I think that's just what happens. I think that's going to be an unintended consequence. People are going to learn how to work the system and they're going to
Right.
rise through the thing. But in my opinion, if you have a guy who has his heart in the fire service or a gal, if they have their heart in the fire service, they're doing the right things and they can learn that side to do the assessment center to master it, those people tend to be really good at their job.
Right.
I've not seen anybody who is really good in the field and also really good at the assessment center who is not also a very good officer.
Right.
You know?
But I'm sure you've seen in your experience too, individuals that are the opposite, like the bare minimum, they're the minimum standard. They don't go above that. And yet they decide to get promoted. And I understand what you're saying as far as not being, nobody wants to be sued, fairness, but to me, you've got to know the individuals that we're not great firemen, and they're also not going to be great officers too. But and I get, like, I guess I don't know if I can say you can't not promote them. I mean, I don't know how that works, but it seems to be like you get the individual that wants the officer position for the pay, for the title, for the rank, and upon completion of getting it, they do nothing with it, and their crews suffer from that.
Well, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I've seen it. It's unfortunate, but at least with our process, it's you know the process. I
Okay.
mean, pretty much everyone knows the process. So if you aspire to be an officer, you can't stay in the bay breaking down the prop forcible entry door 12 hours a day. You're going to have to go take that class that you have no interest in, that's not your passion. Because the department has laid that roadmap out to for promotion. So, the firefighter who doesn't go above and beyond on the fire ground around the station, well, they're going above and beyond in the process. They're only focusing on the process and it doesn't typically equate to a good product, but hey, the process is there. It's a fair game for anybody. So I see a lot of people really downing the educational piece of the fire service. And, most of the time it's because they just don't want to do it.
Right.
That because it's not their passion. They don't want to
Right.
go sit in a classroom and listen to somebody talk and do PowerPoints and written tests. I don't blame them. We're firefighters. None of us want to do that. But somebody has to because the process was created and this is the process. So you can sit there and criticize the process. And maybe 20 years in, you'll get your first promotion when they change it. Or you can bend the process, do it, and then, hey, you could be the fire chief, and then you could change the process.
Right.
So, it's funny. I'm talking about things that we don't want to do. I wish I could find this article. I've never been able to find it again. When I was a rookie, somebody had a magazine laying around. There was an article and the headline. I don't remember the whole article, but the headline was, "Do you love your fire department enough to take a staff job?" And that was when I went to staff, that was what I asked myself. Like,
Okay.
do I love this enough to give up what I love to go up to try to fix it? And I feel like a lot of times we're not honest with ourselves that we want the fire department to be the way we want it to be. It's not how it works. The fire department is the way the fire department is. And we can be how we want to be, but at some place we got to give a little to try to, I guess, increase our influence. I know guys are going to hear this and probably say, "Man, I sound like a sellout." But the truth, it's just the truth. I mean, this is just the way it is.
Right.
And the sooner you accept it, don't let go of your passion. Don't surrender your passion. You don't have to, but you got to play the game to get ahead, and then you can increase your influence. And maybe change some things. Or we can just be a really, really good firefighter on the back. And we need those too.
I was going to ask you, the whole, you always hear if you don't like something, change it. And another adage that you hear is you can only do so much being on the back of the truck. You can affect more change, as you move up to the front and move up higher in rank. I believe that there's got to be a balance, but what you said is so true because I have discussions with friends and colleagues of mine that I'm close to, and we talk about like why the culture in certain organizations are the way they are for the good and why we have some that are in the bad. And one of the things we always bring up is because it's always been that way, you know, like firemen hate change. And it's one of those hard things. It's hard for me too, where I get it. Everyone has different levels of passion of the service, but what I can't stand is individuals that come into this job, you show up to work, and your attitude is more of what can this place do for me to benefit me and not what I can do to benefit the department.
So I think that starts with recruitment, obviously. You know, my department's done a really good job of boosting our numbers. You know, like I said, 400 people in 5 years, that's a lot. That's a lot of people. You know, you're not going to get great people out of it sometimes, but you're going to get some really good people. And I've seen probably more good than bad. But, you know, I think it goes back to the recruitment. What are you saying in your recruitment? Are you saying, come work for us because you get 2 days off, you know, work one day on, get 2 days off, 20-year pension, full benefits, you know, and that's what they come for. Because it really is. I mean, the job is dirty and it's hard, but at least where I work, we get paid pretty well. Our benefits are great, and we can retire in 20 years. It doesn't matter if you're 38 years old, you get a retirement. I mean, that's crazy. It's almost unheard of in some places. So, you know, if you come in, you will benefit. But you know, it does stink, you know, that sometimes that's all they're here for, and it's hard to get them to love it, you know. But you know, I think that falls on us who are in the service, because maybe you can't get them to love the service, but if you can get them to love you and fight for you will get what you want. It's kind of like the old saying, they say that soldiers don't fight for their country, they fight for the guy they're standing next to. That's the fire service. If they love their crew, they'll buy into the crew. If you, and it's easier, well, it's not, I can't say it's easy, but you will have an easier time getting them to buy into your crew versus buying into like big ideals of what the fire service is and what we're here to do, because they can see it day in, day out. They can feel it when a crew is in unison and they're doing it and they got the right purpose. Everybody wants to be a part of that. You know, that's just, we got to quit thinking so big in the fire service. We need to focus small. You know, that was a big thing I struggled with, was I thought really big early in my career, and I suffered from it, struggled with it. I wanted big sweeping changes, and almost to the fault of not paying attention to what was in front of me and missing opportunities in front of me because I wanted the big stuff. So, you know, I think more of us need to focus on the small stuff, and then eventually we'll move the big needle.
And I understand your sentiments on it, but you know, then again too, you have some crews that just don't really get it. And at some point, like, you know, you have to do what's right for you. And not everybody's going to understand why your reasoning behind it, as long as I always tell people, as long as you understand why you're doing it, then that's all that matters. But you know, if you're placed in a crew that complacency is okay for them, but it's not okay for you, at some point you need to find another crew that satisfies your needs.
You need to find another crew, or you need to have a really good sense of humor. That's the way I look at it, is you just got to, at some point, you just got to realize what it is. You got to find what you can do, because that's one thing I've learned is, in my role as battalion chief, a lot of our folks, as soon as it gets hard, they put in a transfer request. You know, that's just what they do. It gets hard and they give a transfer request. Or the officers will say, well, I can't do it with this person. Well, like I said, this sounds like company man talk, but hey, you're an officer. You have a mission. These are your resources. Complete the mission. You know, I think that's why we're drawn to military leaders so much, is because the ones that were in battle that found a way, they found a way. They didn't sit there in a foxhole and complain about, we don't have enough paper towels. You know, we don't have enough ammunition. They said, hey, this is what we have. That's what we're supposed to do. Let's go do it. And they did it. And that's what made them a great leader. They didn't have solid people behind them all the time. Now, when they did, they made miracles happen, right? Sometimes we're not here to make miracles happen. Sometimes we're here to just make it happen. And I think as officers, we're so quick to point our fingers at administration, at a whole bunch of external stuff. The thing you got to understand is if you take a leadership role, it's all your problem. It is. It doesn't matter where the problem started. If it's affecting you and your crew, it's your problem. Fix it. Don't complain about it. And look at it as a challenge to work around. If that may, you know, that's, and that kind of goes to the sense of humor piece. Like sometimes, you know, you got to laugh about it a little bit and work around it. You know, hey, we don't have any soap to mop the floor. Okay. Use water and laugh about it. You know, like,
Okay.
I mean,
Okay.
those guys I worked with at Station 20, we mopped the floor with water for months. I mean, we really did. It was because one of the senior guys looked at me and said, "We're going to mop. If we don't have soap, it's not our problem. We're going to mop the floor." And we mopped with hot water.
Okay.
And we did it every day. And we stayed in our, because that's what we were supposed to do. And I know it sounds crazy, but we didn't get, because what happens is, say you go months without mopping the floor because you didn't have soap. Well, now you have soap. How often do you think the floor is going to get mopped?
Yeah, right.
Everyone's used to not mopping.
Right.
You know, it's, there's a, so as an officer, you got to keep it going. You just got to keep it going.
And one of the, I want to ask you, and I know you said kind of roll with it, you know, when things get hard, you know, a lot of people want to put transfer requests. I get that. But what if the issue stems from the leader that you have on the shift, you know what I mean? Like the individual takes that role, he is supposed to, like, to me, if you're going to take the position of lieutenant, captain, company officer, whatever you want to call it, and you yourself are not fulfilling that mission, and the crews are going to see it, and at some point, like, as a firefighter, if that was you, would you just laugh about it, or would you hold on for as long as you can until it was like, hey, you know what? Like, this is it. I gotta get out of here.
So this happens a lot, you know. Hey, you really jam up firefighters or under people that they don't respect, don't mesh with, don't get with, and it is frustrating. But what I ask them is, who do you respect? What kind of firefighter do you respect? And what would they do in this situation? Most of the time, no matter how bad the leader is, the firefighter is going to do their job. They're going to do what they're told, without too much grief to the officer. And they're going to, I guess, absorb it and try to not let it spill over to the other firefighters, if that makes sense. You know, that's, in my opinion, that's the highest standard. That silent, I'll take it, I'll do it, get it done, right? That's not how most of us are. Of course, we're going to gripe. Of course, we're going to be mad. Of course, we're going to be frustrated. I was one of those people. I've served under people that I was not crazy about, and I did not always handle it great. But what I've learned is, trying to buck the officer, trying to make the officer look stupid, try to point out their weaknesses, trying to, it never works. You know, you're much better doing your job, doing what you can to build the officer up. Because if that officer's really bad, they'll still stumble on you trying to build them up, and everyone else will see it. You don't need to point it out. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when you go back to your station, that officer's not going to have it out for you. You know, because that's your officer. They're still your boss, and they can make life miserable for you. So it's a lot better to just sense of humor, humility, try to see it as a challenge and work through it. It sounds so frustrating, but again, same as like as an officer, it doesn't matter where the problem starts. When the problem's affecting you, it's your problem. You have to fix it. Same with a firefighter. If the officer is bad, that's your problem. Fix it. You know, take it, do what you got to do to fix it. You can put in a transfer request, but if you put in a transfer request and then go to gripe to every single person, this officer's terrible. They won't let us do this. They won't let us do that. All it's going to do is make you look like a complainer,
Right.
you know. But if other, make yourself wanted. Don't let other people know that you want out. Make yourself wanted. If
Okay.
that makes sense.
Yep.
Because people will look and go, man, if that guy can work for that person and smile and make it and still come to work and do a good job, they're going to be really good with us. And the people will start moving, making moves to try to get you on their team.
It. All right. Love that advice. 'Cause I mean, it's something you hear when, for me, when I go to conferences, you hear that all the time and you hear different people's takes on it, but I've never heard anybody say what you said. Like, sometimes you just gotta take it because firemen want the easy way. Hey, transfer request. Like, and they'll send multiple transfer requests. Hopefully the chiefs get the hint, but that's a different way of looking at it. And I mean, it's very genuine, really is.
Well, something funny is I'm a pretty, I like people to like me. That's just something I do. I like to be friends with people. That's why I'm in the fire service. So a lot of people when I was a captain would say, man, I got to get transferred over to you, to your crew. You guys are getting along. Everything's good. I hate the guy I'm under. He makes us train at 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
Well, I make our guys try to train at 9 o'clock at night also. So if you got a problem with that over there, you're going to have a serious problem with me because my thing is I don't believe, well, this is going to sound bad. We have 24 hours to get things done. You got to get them done. Even if it's at 8 o'clock at night, if you set your day and said, we're going to train today, you get the training done. Don't let it slip
Right,
because it's a
right.
slippery, slippery slope. So yeah, that was the complaints. When you start complaining, sometimes you'll complain about stuff that the guy you're complaining to does himself.
Right.
So.
Okay. Your topic of competent crews, you stated, you're not driving the decisions on the fire ground unless something bad occurs. So I'm gonna let you have it with that topic.
Yeah, so the other night I had a fire. I'd been on vacation for a couple of weeks and I came back and it was my first shift back. And we had a fire that night, 3 o'clock in the morning. It was couple of it was a duplex and it was rolling into an exposure next to it, and I got there a little late. The crews were already there. They were already operating. This is the operation was going. I assumed command, got it, just holding accountability, but I didn't really give a lot of orders, because things were already rolling and people were doing things, and I could see people not going into structures or anything, but because it was a defensive fire for the most part. I had one crew inside on the exposure. But I just kind of had a moment where I was thinking, I'm not really making decisions. I'm deciding what I'm going to allow to happen because these guys know what they're supposed to do. So if I just kind of stay out of the way, let them do it with, safely. There's been, I find myself a lot more times going, hey, come over this way. Or hey, why don't you come off the porch and get a ladder and go do this instead of what you're doing? But then there's a lot of times where I see him doing something and I go, that's working. And I don't say a thing. All I say is afterwards, hey, good job. That was a good idea with that. Now, I know in the world of incident command, this sounds so loosey-goosey and probably contradictory to everything they say about command and control. What I can tell you, I've at 2 years of being a battalion chief, trying to hold that level of control, a lot of times all you do is just make mistakes. You delay things from happening. You kill your guys' initiative, their want to. If you let everyone wants to be, we all want to be heroes. We all want to be the guys making the right choice. You just let them make the right choice and say, that was the right choice. Good job. Those guys are going to, they're going to walk through walls for you.
Right.
But if you're coming in there going, hey, move that nozzle 6 feet to the left. You know what I mean? Like a lot of times the commander, there's really nothing more than you just trying to gain command, if that makes sense. And what are you gaining in that other than just feeling like you're in control? So, now I've been on some scenes where it's gone bad and it's gotten a little out of hand, but it's usually my own fault because I didn't step in when I should have stepped in. And we usually talk after the fire, and most of the tailboard talks that we have after our fires, I probably talk more about mistakes that I made. If I look at what something happened, I don't just lay it all on them. Hey, I saw you do this. I should have told you to do it this way. You know what I mean? I'm not placing blame. I don't want to snuff good intentions.
Right.
We need them to be intentional and good and want to do the right things. So,
Right.
yeah, it's just in my opinion, it's more about allowing the good things to happen and stopping them before they get bad versus just telling everybody what to do.
Right. Right. And I think a lot of what, you know, it's the way you talk about like the mistakes that you make, you know, that's humility right there in itself. But you mentioned earlier in the interview that, you know, firemen have type A personalities, the ego. I think that's the side of the fire service that rears its ugly head where it comes to, especially on like social media, you know, beefing, debating, name calling off of something where it's like, if we all just were to take a breath, read or ask further questions to whatever the case may be, we might be able to understand that person's perspective. And one of the things for me is, I don't care what rank you are. As humans, we all make mistakes. Like, no one's perfect, but with certain firefighters, it's like, well, that's, I'd never make that mistake though. Like, that's dumb. Like, why would you do that? You know? And we just like eat each other up. We eat our own. And it's just like, why do we do that?
So one thing I've tried to pay attention to since I'm a battalion chief is I try to stay away from these kitchen table declarations, right?
Okay.
This, we're going to do this way. You know, that other battalion, they're stupid, they're scared, spraying through windows, all that. I'll listen to the guys so I can gauge where they are mentally without putting too much of my own, because, you know, luckily or unluckily, where I work, we're probably going to have a fire that night. So whatever you said, I'm going to see if you back it up in about 3 hours.
Right.
What I found was, even if they're unreasonable at the table, when that fire's burning, they change their game pretty quick. You know what I mean? That guy who's saying they're going into every building is, no matter what, you're going to have to pull me out of that building. Well, 3 hours later, I'll see that same one putting a nozzle in a window. You know? So that's what I'm, they're logical. Nobody's that dumb. Nobody's going to put themselves in danger. They like to talk. They like to put on the show and all that good stuff. But when it comes down to it's time to go, everyone, in my opinion, changes a little bit. So,
right.
You know, I know not every department has that, I don't know what the word is, ability, because maybe they're not running as many structure fires or,
right.
You know, whatever.
Right.
So the kitchen table declarations take on a little more weight. And they certainly do, where I'm not trying to discredit all of it. I'm not trying to say ignore it, but try to focus more on action and just kind of, when I'm at the table, if I'm in the conversation, I try to keep it always open. Because you know, they always like to say, what do you think? I was like, well, I think we'll see what we got when we get there. You know, that's my thing. We'll see what we got when we get there.
Okay.
And we'll make the choice. Now, you know, as long as we all have the same priorities, we're there for life safety. If it's a search issue, we're going for the search and we're going to support the search. That's what we're doing. I don't care how we do it, but that's what we're there to do.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. With that being said, you're already a battalion chief, so I always like to ask the guests before we conclude, where would you like to see yourself? And me personally, I feel like I can see yourself at some point in your career moving up even further into the ranks of the fire service, just because of the way you talk, the mentality, how you observe things. So with that being said, where would you like to see yourself retire before you're, you know, where would you like to see yourself before you hang it up, I should say?
I'd like to be a battalion chief exactly where I'm at, talking to Danny B 7 years from now about lessons learned to fire chief Danny B.
I don't know about that one. I can see, I'm flipping it. I can see you running an organization. It may not be the size of Birmingham, but after your career, you know, I can see you looking like, hey, an employment opportunity for a fire chief for maybe, you know, something maybe smaller, maybe even bigger.
I mean, I'm not going to discredit it. You know, like we'll see what we got when we get there. How about
right.
that?
I like it. I like it. I like
I
it.
I know right now I'm loving life. I'm loving my job. You know, I'm just loving life. I'm just being grateful for what we got. And there's one thing I'll say, since we're going to conclude, is there's a lot of people out there that say the fire service is broken.
Okay.
It's not broken. It's still going. It's still driving. One wheel's wobbling. You know, the steering wheel's not responsive. You know, the window won't roll down. The AC's not working. You know, but we're still going.
Right.
And we're still driving, so it ain't broken. So pay attention because we're going somewhere.
Right. I like that. I like that because it's true. I mean, because you mentioned that, and I think of the reserve rigs that we have. None of the air conditioners work. Things are broken. You know, anytime you get on a reserve piece, it's not the greatest, but we all make do with what we got. We never turn down, oh, hey, we're going to put you on a reserve. Well, I guess we're going out of service. Like, we all just roll with it.
Yep. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I could talk all day, Danny. I'm sorry.
No, it's just, fine. It's fine.
You know, I talk. I was telling the guys the other day that they were talking about, you know, because I really thought a lot about places, firefighters who work in really tough departments where things aren't perfect.
Right.
You know, and I have a lot of respect for the ones that stay, you know, not the ones who leave. They leave. That's fine. You can leave. It's your choice. But the ones who stay, knowing what they're up against, they just have my heart. You know, I love those guys so, so much. And, you know, at the end of the day, when we look back on our lives, what do you want to talk about? You know, and I was telling the young guys this the other day, I said, what was your first car? Somebody said, you know, I don't know, it was like a nice Jeep Cherokee, right? So I looked across the other room and said, what about your first car? This guy says it was a 1989 Cavalier with no AC, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was a junker. And I looked at the room and said, okay, if we had to listen to the story of somebody's first car, whose story do you want to listen to? The guy who had the really nice car where everything worked, or the guy who was driving a beater and still trying to make do? You know, that's the guy you want to listen to. And that's what makes life interesting. It's the spice of life. So when things get hard, just say, hey, man, this is a gift. You know, I'm going to have a lot to talk about in the end.
Right. Okay. And what's the attract? Because I'm trying to think, like, I know people that stay with organizations that, you know, whatever the case may be, whether it's low pay, staffing is bad, the equipment is bad. Like, I'm reading articles about big cities like Chicago and what they're going through with their apparatus. And you think about the size of Chicago, the personnel, the their budget, and it's like it shouldn't happen. But, you know, people always say, and I hear this a lot too, that the tough times won't last. Eventually the tide will turn and somebody will come in and will make that change. But damn, you know, it's got to be hard to just continue day in, day out, knowing that you're getting beat up, but the light's at the end of the tunnel, maybe?
So the tough times never stop. What happens is if you don't walk away from the tough times, you just get tough enough to take it. That's the way I look at it. It gets easier because you're tougher and you're able to deal with it. So that's how I feel. If you don't run from it, you'll get tough enough to take it.
Okay. And I think a lot of us can relate to it because, yeah, I won't go into detail, but yeah, it's just the fire service is awesome. But man, do sometimes especially the ones that are really passionate, they face some adversities and you start thinking to yourself, way out, different options, keeping things in the back pocket. So it's, that's why I like doing this, because I think not only does it benefit the listeners, it also benefits me hearing, you know, people like you talk about things to kind of, you know, control what you can control and just giving advice about holding together and just trying to stay positive when times aren't easy.
Yeah, it's, hey, I'm not gonna lie. I struggle. And guys like yourself and, you know, good friends. I have a network of firefighters I met at the fire academy. We've been on a group text for the last 3 years. And I probably have about 48 missed text just from this hour talking to you, because we're constantly supporting each other and bouncing ideas off each other and just trying to keep it going. So, you know, we're all facing our own battles. Don't turn away from your battle. Find support to help yourself get through it. And hey, you know, if it's terrible, listen to yourself. You can go somewhere else. I'm not trying to tell people they can't do it. You know, I don't want anybody to die in a house fire. Also don't want anybody to live a miserable existence because they're trying to stay at a fire department. You know, find your happiness, you know, find your thing. And, you know, to those passionate guys out there that are getting knocked down, you know, just keep going. We're out there, we're listening. I mean, you may not know it, but we're listening.
Right. I love the message, Chief. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I have to give a shout out to Clay. Clay is the one that made this happen. After our interview, I texted him and he was like, he texted me back either that day or the next day. He's like, I got a guy for you. And he sent me information. So Clay, if you're listening, I really appreciate it. Obviously, Chief Clay thinks very highly of you, or he wouldn't have mentioned it to, he wouldn't have mentioned your name. So, I appreciate you coming on and doing this.
Well, that's the feeling is reciprocal, especially towards Clay. He taught me more than probably anybody in the fire service. I got to give it to him. He showed me stuff that I didn't even know about, and he's opened a whole world to me, including you. I mean, he's always filling me up with good stuff. So,
Right,
love that
right.
guy.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, Chief.
Hey, thanks, Danny B. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.